When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode of Swole Patrol is brought to you by Molecule, the only air purifier that actually destroys pollutants. Offer is $75 off your first order. You heard me correctly. Visit Molecule, that's MOLEKULE.com. And at checkout, enter the promo code SWOLE, SWOLE. Dr. Drew and I know you're going to love it.
It's the Swole Patrol, it's the Swole Patrol. Suck my balls and lick all my asshole. My baller is so buff and he deadlifts more than you, and he only eats plants. He's a vegan athlete and he is well known amongst the kettlebell community. My baller is super strong and he's stronger than you. So if you have something to say about vegan Sancho's face.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. That might have to be my new intro song.
It's called Say It to Mike's Face.
I do a custom intro song every single Swole Patrol, and sometimes it works out.
Prepares hours on it.
I prepare 0 seconds, and that's the only time it works well. Our guest today is super, super well-respected amongst the fitness and health community. He does the Live Life Aggressively podcast, his own podcast, and I recommend it highly. He is also outside of just giving great information, you can go to MikeMuller.com to get all the info on him. And
spell his last name so we get it.
M-A-H-L-E-R. Yeah. He is a guy that I'm not a big supplement guy, but I will unashamedly and without any type of financial interest promote all of Mike's supplement line. It is fantastic. I know from firsthand. I've used it and it works, and it's not – he is not a snake oil salesman, which a lot of the supplement industry is. So he is Mike Mahler, and welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thank you so much. Thanks for that nice introduction as well.
It's my pleasure, man. Let's dive right into something that I think that is super, super duper important to Dr. Drew right on the tip of what he is dealing with right now with his own fitness. And something that I think you're perfectly suited to help him with. And that is, Dr. Drew is a guy who likes to train frequently, but he's been having some trouble. He's been complaining about trying to manage the amount of intensity to meet the amount of volume that he's training with, because you are a guy, Drew, admittedly, who likes to train every day if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I've lately started doing it twice a day a little bit.
There you
go. I just divide it up. I just go, oh, I'll go do it in the afternoon.
You know, Mike, you're a guy, unlike a lot, you know, there's plenty of high intensity fellas out there and gals, and I'm all for that if that works for you. And there's plenty of the more high volume stuff. But I know you'll even dive into like the Leo Costa style of really training super frequently. And you've had a lot of success doing it. What's your take on that with the high frequency stuff?
Well, you just have to look at if you want to train intensely, right? This means training to failure or close to it. You can do that and it can be very effective. The key is you can't do it frequently because it requires more recovery time. It also fits a certain personality type of someone who wants to push themselves to the limit. They enjoy the challenge, the pain of pushing those last few repetitions. Not everyone is going to be a fit for that style of training. The problem, though, with high-intensity training, because you can't do it frequently, you don't get good at the skill set of training. And effective strength training is a skill set. You wouldn't play the piano once a week until you can't play anymore. You would play it every day, working on refining technique, getting better.
My thing was I'd always found that I got more out of at least 4 days a week, sometimes five or six.
Sure.
And I also have done high intensity, and I get essentially nothing out of it. I just get nothing.
Right.
I get this great pump, and I feel great, and I literally cry. It's so intense. I cry. I know I'm doing high intensity work because it actually makes me sob a little bit. And that's how hard I'm working. And I walk away and I go, well, it's all nothing, zero. Well, if I get high volume frequently, I just get tons out of it and I feel great. Tell me what you think about this, because this is what set me between Mark Bell and this, what set me back at doing heavy weights again, was I did that fitness genes thing. I was doing it for a podcast. And he did my genetic profile, and he goes, you know, you're the kind of person that should be working out very frequently, very intense. And I went, yeah, I know. I've been telling everybody else that. And he goes, do try that and see if that didn't work. And then we had a thing with Mark, and lo and behold, I'm back.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, Mike, you're a guy who's deadlifting 4 or 5 days a week.
That I could not do. Although but this would be good for me, though. I have started – I don't know how to manage my legs very well. Because I start to get tired.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the thing. How do you manage? Because Mike Mahler, for those of you who don't know, I mean, it's not all talk. This guy, you're a guy who can hit five plates for reps on a deadlift. You're a strong, strong guy. The weight high, you know, 4 or 5 days a week.
Oh my God!
It is a lot, but it can be done successfully. And you know, kind of what's the secret to that?
Well, here's the key. If you're going to train frequently, right? So if I'm training the deadlift 4 or 5 times a week, I'm going to use 65 to 80% of my one rep max, and I'm going to keep it to 3 sets in the 3 to 5 set range. Now, most of those workouts are going to be very easy. You're going to leave feeling fresh. You're going to leave the same way you would feel after a good massage. And this is what psychologically a lot of people have a difficult time with. Because we keep hearing that narrative of no pain, no gain. You should be wiped out after you work out. You should be sore the next day. Oh, I can't walk. People wear it as a badge of honor. But when you're focused on getting as strong as possible, the more often you can train and recover, the faster you're going to make progress. When I was deadlifting once a week, that worked for a while, but my progress is way faster right now. I have a goal of deadlifting 6 plates or 585 pounds. At a body weight of 195, right? Oh. So that would be 3 times my body weight. And I'm very close to that. I'm knocking on the door of that. I'm definitely going to hit it before I turn 45 in October.
Good for you.
You're a guy who values mental strength and what comes along with really embracing the iron and training and the kind of mental fortitude that comes along with that. How do you reason with leaving some gas in the tank while also scratching that itch to build that mental strength?
Right. Well, you have to look at other aspects of progress. So instead of looking at lifting the most weight possible every single time, which is just demonstrating strength, you're not building strength when you do that. You have to look at other facets of improvement, such as repetition speed. If my rep speed accelerates, even with the same weight, that's a form of progression. My friend Sabina Scala, she's a UK strength coach. She measures the repetition time.
We never talk
of her
about
clients.
That.
She works with MMA clients all the time.
Well, that makes sense for them. My God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the faster you can move something, the stronger you can be as well, because speed is a critical component of strength. Even if the bar looks like it's moving slow, the intent should be to move it as fast as possible.
And do you value? I mean, do you put any value on like Westside? I know has days devoted to speed training where the weights are really low, especially for those monsters, and they're just moving. The whole goal is for that day of training really hitting high repetition speed. Is that something that you incorporate into your training or would recommend?
I do, and I love Westside, and I think Louis Simmons is the best powerlifting coach ever. I'm a huge fan of Louis Simmons. I'm a big fan of Westside. What I do is very instinctive training. So this is not how I train myself is not necessarily how I would design a program for someone else. I've just been training for so long that I have an idea of what I'm going to do, and then once I do my warm-up sets, I modify. So for example, last week I was doing my warm-up sets. I was only planning on doing maybe 4:45 for sets of three, but everything felt so light on the deadlift that I ended up going to 5:05 for sets of three. I just made that decision right on the spot. I've had other days where I had a plan of going in and deadlifting maybe 550 for a couple singles. But as I did my warm-up weights, I realized that it's probably not there, or if it is there, it's going to be with really bad technique. So instead of making that mistake and leaving on a negative, I just kept the weights lighter and focused on speed, technique, being really crisp. With the deadlift, there's so much more technique than what it appears. I mean, if you describe the deadlift to someone, it's, okay, you're just going to bend over and pick up a weight. Well, anyone who can pick up a lot of weight, it's way more complex than that. You have to drop your hips at the right time. You have to drive the bar off the second you drop your hips. There's so much technique that's involved. So even using lighter weights, if it's improving that technique, when you go back up to the heavier weights, you're way less injury prone and your performance is going to be much stronger.
You know, you and I were talking before we got started and you were saying that, you know, deadlifting 4 or 5 times a week, your back's never felt better. And I've had
the same experience. I don't know about never felt better, but it's remarkably better.
I'm wondering if that's the secret for your legs, Drew, and that maybe
more frequently
the frequency of switching over to squatting.
There's something frequently. I'm experimenting with different things.
Yeah,
I'm separating the deadlifts from the legs a little bit, seeing if that, because one of my things I'm finding is I have a lot of pain, not intolerable pain, but more pain than I think I should, sort of tendonitis kind of pain. So yeah. I feel like I'm. And knee pain, which I've never had before. And I think, something's going on. And I'm fatigued. Like I get by 9 o'clock at night, I'm like gassed, which is kind of unusual for me, even lifting heavy weights.
So maybe that's the key, is being able to back off and understanding.
Back off and separate it, maybe not try to do all in one day.
Having the discipline. I mean, that's the thing, right, Mike, is like the discipline. Right. Because I think if you're listening to this podcast, and certainly the guys that are talking on this podcast right now, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a love of going hard.
Well, I was going to say, we love going hard, but we're not an elite athlete like Mike is. And I'm trying to do this in the realm of what an average citizen can
right.
do. You know?
So, but you do have that. You do want to scratch that itch of going hard and feeling.
It's my preference. You know my preference.
Right.
So it's my preference.
So I'm saying, like, maybe it's having the discipline to scale it back a little bit.
It's something to do with It's something to do with. It's you know what it is? If I'm going to go heavy in squats, I need like 4 day recovery.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Right.
And so I wasn't giving myself that, and I started noticing stuff. So is that about right, Mike?
Well, here's the thing with squats. I used to fall into the narrative of hip squats once a week, about barbell squats, and then give yourself a week to recover, come back. But then I tried the Smolov squat program, which is a Russian powerlifting program that is high frequency.
Hold on now. So tell us what that is. We're like, whoa, what's this?
Drew likes anything Russian.
Russian powerlifting.
4 times a week with this program. One day you do 4 sets of 9, then you do 5 sets of 7, 7 sets of 5, 10 sets of 3 at different weights.
Oh.
And so the first month you squat 4 times a week. My squat blasted through a plateau doing this program. I did it last year. And that's what inspired me to do a high-frequency deadlift program, because I didn't think a high-frequency squat program would work, and it worked extremely well, way better than infrequent for a variety of reasons. But one of the main reasons why it works so well is neurological efficiency. Wow. Your mind-body connection becomes way more profound when you squat more often. Also, if you throw a hard stimulus at your body, and as long as you give yourself the tools to recover, your body will adapt. So when you squat 4 times, I mean, here's the crazy thing. You go in on Monday and you squat, and the next day you're sore, just like you always are when you squat.
Yeah.
But you have to go back in that day and squat again. And guess what? You can do it, and you're stronger, and you feel even better after you do it. The soreness starts going away. So I think when you train often, it becomes almost a form of joint mobility. When you train infrequently, your body tightens up a lot more. And when you work out, it takes a while to get into the groove. My groove for deadlifts now is really fast. I cruise through the warm-up weights and hit those top sets. While if I only did it once a week, it takes a while. I've got to stretch out. I've got to do a bunch of warm-up sets to get into the groove, get my mind ready, get the technique ready. When you do something infrequently, often you're just going through these rehearsal cues of remembering the technique. When you do it often, just like driving your car every day, it's automatic. You don't have to think about it.
Do you keep the rest of your workout going around that 4-day-a-week workout? Do you change that?
Yeah, I do full body workouts every time. So I always do upper body press, upper body pull, lower body press, lower body pull, and then something for the core, torso. So every single workout's a full body workout. And then the volume is low because the frequency is high, right? I can't do 10 sets of five of five different exercises and then do that five times a week. So it's right. not going to work out.
Right.
So it's three, no, generally no more than three sets, at the most five.
There you go.
I might do that.
It's starting to make sense,
uh-oh,
isn't it, Drew?
Uh-oh.
Starting to make sense.
I might have to try that one.
It's fun, too. I like working out often, and I like not being beaten up because I've got other things to do, and you're way busier than I am. So this style of training is perfect for you because you're not going to beat up. You're not going to be beat up and sore after a session like this. You can train every day like this and do just fine.
I don't mind being beat up and sore. It's the gassed out, at, you know, the yeah. evening.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah, I like kind of being beat up and sore.
I do too, which is why psychologically it was hard to do something like this, because I like the rush that comes with yeah. pushing past a barrier, yeah. lifting something that you don't think you can do, psyching yourself up. And you still do that with this style of training. You just don't do it often. So maybe you do 8 weeks of practice and then you go for a PR and then you go back to practice sets. You're just not doing it every single time. See, the mistake a lot of people make is they try to hit a PR every single time they work out, especially young guys.
Yeah.
Right. So every time they work out, they're trying to lift more than the last time.
Yeah.
And that works for beginners, maybe for the first 3-6 months, maybe even the first year.
Yep.
But eventually, you're going to start going backwards.
Yep.
Staying with training, how I've noticed you incorporating, you know, you've been well known for being a kettlebell expert. And you
yes.
incorporate into your barbell training some kettlebell movements. How difficult is it? And if you could give us like the Reader's Digest version of
sure.
incorporating crucial kettlebell movements into a barbell program.
It's not difficult at all when you remember that kettlebells are weights, right? So kettlebell exercises fall within those five categories I just mentioned. So my incorporation of kettlebells at this point is double kettlebell swings outside the feet, because that feels really good on the lower back and posterior chain, especially after heavy squats or deadlifts.
Hold on. What are those?
It's double swing. So instead, typically kettlebell swing is done
yeah.
between the legs.
Yeah.
So this is a narrow stance, double, so one in each hand.
Alternating? Oh, together.
No, together
okay,
on the outside.
Okay, got
on
it.
The outside of the legs.
Okay, that's how I broke my knee. Anyway.
Yeah, you want to make sure that technique is good. You don't want one of those kettlebell boulders going right into your knee. But my body type is, when I deadlift, I use a fairly close stance. I don't do sumo or a wider stance. So and when I do box jumps, it's a fairly close stance. So I'm more of a close stance guy for heavy weight training. So when it comes to double kettlebell swings, a closer stance and swinging the bells on the outside of my feet is what works best for my body type. It feels way more fluid. And then it just loosens up the body too. And I love kettlebell overhead presses, just because the offset nature of the kettlebell helps pull it into a nice groove for shoulder flexibility and stability, meaning that when you lock out the weights overhead, it's not in front of your head, as it often is when people use dumbbells and a barbell, not because there's anything wrong with dumbbells or barbells, just because they have tight shoulders and it goes that way. But with the kettlebell, because it's offset, it tends to pull back. And that's exactly where you want it to be when you lock out overhead. And it feels really good. It's one of my favorite pressing moves.
And switching over to diet,
sure.
you have a tremendous amount of good information that you espouse when it comes to diet. One of the things that I've always respected about you is that you, for way before intermittent fasting was in vogue, way before, you were talking about how the bodybuilding industry in particular has tricked people into eating far too frequently.
Right.
And I just, if you could talk a little bit about that, the idea of spreading out your meals and maybe not eating this, you know, eating like Jay Cutler, having a meal every hour and a half to 2 hours, like a lot of people who are concerned with their physique do. There's a lot right. of, you know, sincere advantages to spreading out your meals. Can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, I'd love to. Intermittent fasting is something my friend Ori Hofmeckler got me into. He's the author of The Warrior Diet, and he's the one who really popularized intermittent. I mean, he wrote this book in, I think it was 1999 or 2000, so this is way before intermittent fasting blew up, and he has a very intelligent approach. Now, I don't generally go all day without eating most days. I do that a couple times a week, but on days I'm training really hard, I like to have some meal in my body a couple hours before I train. Thing is I don't eat big meals during the day. That's when I'm most active. And then I tend to consume a bigger dinner. But with the longer stretches, here's the thing. Here's the thing about eating frequently. a lot of people do it and it works for them. And that's great. I wouldn't say stop doing it. If you're getting good results, keep doing it. But the problem with eating several times a day is you're training your body to rely on the food that's coming in. So if you train your body to eat every 2 hours, your body's going to be used to eating every 2 hours. And if you miss one of those meals, you're going to have a blood sugar crash and you're going to feel terrible because that's what your body's used to. It's looking for its fix.
Right.
Now, when you go to longer stretches, what happens is 3 hours after you eat, insulin starts going down. Insulin goes up when you eat to drive nutrition into your muscle cells and liver. A couple hours after you eat, insulin goes down. Another hormone called glucagon comes up. And that pulls energy out of the liver, and then it goes to stored body fat. So now you're getting a snack on stored body fat in between meals, and you're also improving leptin and insulin sensitivity, which are master control hormones that have a cascade effect on other hormones. And then you also have more time to do stuff. We're all busy. We're all trying to get stuff done. Now, it's important to eat. It's important to eat healthy. But if you can have a very healthy meal with a good balance of fat, protein, low glycemic carbohydrates, you'll find that you can go a much longer stretch than you realize. When I have my morning shake, I'm not hungry for 6 hours. When I have dinner, I'm not hungry for the rest of the evening because I'm giving my body very high nutrition every single time I eat.
Yeah. Man, I really, really want people to hear that. And again, just like Mike Mahler said, if you're eating eight times a day and you're shredded and you're feeling great,
enjoy.
Right.
But
right. Some people love it.
Yeah.
Some people love eating that often, and that's great. I wouldn't say stop doing that. I have a friend, Lisa Baelish. She's a kettlebell instructor, and she comes from a fitness figure background. And she's in her 40s, and she looks great. She's very lean all year round. And she has followed that small meal frequency approach for decades. And it obviously works great for her. Now, could she get the same results doing longer stretches? Probably. But if she's used to eating that way and she likes it, more power to them. The thing is that whenever someone has great results with an approach, they somehow think everybody else is going to have great results too. And they become that annoying person that can't stop talking about it, right? Let's say someone started taking tennis lessons and they think tennis is the greatest thing. They're like, come on, Mike, why don't you play tennis?
Yeah.
Come play tennis.
Right.
It's like, great, I'm glad you found something you enjoy, but I have no interest in that.
I think that's the way it used to be, but people are so primitive now. It really is more, you need to come to my church.
Yeah.
It's really, right. It's getting very
It becomes
weird.
Religion, yeah.
Very weird.
Yeah, and I don't like that. I don't like that approach. I don't like trying to push, you know, I have strong personal beliefs, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to try to push it on every single person I meet.
Yeah.
And I've been on a vegan diet for 25 years, and I never want to be that guy where I'm having dinner with a friend and I'm going, oh, did you know what happened to that animal to get on your plate? And, oh, you should feel, you know, I'm not trying to make people feel guilty and make people feel bad. I rather just present a powerful personal example. And then if people are more interested in what I have to do, I'm happy to answer the questions.
Lead by example.
That is something that you definitely do. Whenever I get any question via Twitter or Instagram, anything like that, people asking me about plant-based anything, the first thing I do is give them your name and I say, go over to Mike Mahler's website. That's the best example of how to live a healthy plant-based lifestyle. If someone's an endurance athlete, I say Rich Roll. If someone's interested in strength and power, right, automatically I gear them towards you. That's something I really have always respected about you as well, is that, you know, that's not typical in the vegan world, right, at least in the right, public for vegans. There's a lot of people who like to be dogmatic about it. Are you in any way tempted with the movement of the carnivore diet? Are you tempted to kind of break out of that mold? Because that has to be just counterintuitive to everything that you think nutritionally.
The carnivore diet, what do I think about it? Is that the question?
Well, not, I'm sure I can kind of guess what you think about it. But my question is, you know, it's with so many people now adopting that. And I'm a meat eater. I don't have any problem with it if that's what you choose to do. But I also am out there saying, I don't think eating an exclusively animal flesh protein diet is healthy, and that plant matter has a lot to offer.
Right.
You know, so I'm trying to in there, and I get a lot of shit for it from the people who get dogmatic about stuff. You know,
here's my take on all that. And I'm a guy who goes, if you have the results to back up whatever you're doing, then you have the results, right? And that's invaluable.
Yeah.
Now, with the carnivore diet, the guy who popularized it, right, Sean Baker, I believe he's been on your show.
Yep.
He released his blood work a while back, and he had the lowest testosterone I've ever seen, and he had type 2 diabetes based on his glucose level. It was 126. So based on his results, I would say it's not working for him. Now, right. I have friends such as Steve Maxwell, who did very similar diet when I first met him. He's more balanced now, and he had great results with that. And the doctor, I forget his name, who got him on it, he was a much older guy and very lean, jacked dude. He had great results with it too. So the blood work doesn't lie. And I give Dr. Baker a lot of credit for releasing that blood work too, by the way, because he didn't have to do that. He could have looked at that blood work and said, well, I'm going to keep this to myself because I'm going to get crucified for this.
I give him a lot of credit too. He's totally transparent, and he's a likable guy. Dr. Baker's a good dude. And he's
you can't be a scientist and withhold data.
Yeah.
You can't.
No, that's right. Yeah. That's right. No, but I respect that a lot.
Yeah.
But though, if that were my blood work, I would be extremely concerned. I mean, I sent it to my friend, Dr. Mark Gordon. I don't know if you guys have had him on the show or not.
We had him on the Mike and Drew podcast. We did.
Okay.
He had some fascinating things to say about, you know, traumatic brain injury and how it affected hormones. Yeah.
He's one of the foremost hormone optimization experts out there. In fact, if I had to pick one guy, I would pick him because he's high integrity, extremely knowledgeable, and explains these things really well. And I sent the blood work over to him just for his feedback. I was curious what he had to say. He called me up within 2 seconds. He was so concerned. He goes, I don't know who this is, but there's a lot of problems here. So I would be concerned if that were my blood work. That's an extremely low testosterone level. I believe it was 200 something, which is extremely low. My dad's 75. His testosterone's 550. Just to give you some context, and he's not a workout guy at all. So you shouldn't have levels that are that low, especially when you're adopting a fitness lifestyle. And the glucose I thought was interesting because he's on essentially a zero carbohydrate diet, yet his glucose is through the roof.
Yeah, that is interesting.
I thought that was intriguing too.
Does he have a family history of diabetes, do we know?
I don't know. I don't
know. Because what you don't know is whether this was something coming anyway.
Right.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's
a good point. But certainly this didn't help. This didn't help much.
But I don't think he necessarily – I think if you just balanced it out a little bit, he'd probably improve his numbers quite a bit. Maybe a more of a paleo diet type approach where you incorporate a lot of vegetables, some fruits, just a little bit more balance. I think he would probably get much better results. I'm a big guy in balance. Whatever diet you're on, I believe it has to be balanced. And what I mean by that is you need a good amount of healthy fats. You need some carbohydrates and you need some protein to feel your, at least I do, to feel my best. Now, my vegan diet is different than a lot of other people because a lot of the vegan diets you hear are being popularized are extremely high carbohydrate, very low protein and fat. And that approach has never worked well for me as a strength guy. I like at least 30-40% of my overall calorie intake coming from good fats, avocados, nuts and seeds, flax seeds, hemp seeds, etc. And then maybe 20% from protein and the rest from carbohydrates. I've always felt really good on that. I find that if I go too high in carbohydrates, and I mean healthy carbohydrates, fruits, vegetables, etc., I don't feel good. I can actually, I almost have somewhat of a hangover effect if my carbohydrate intake is too high.
Right.
I get depressed. I feel off. I feel weak. I remember years ago, I did an experiment. I read Tony Robbins' book, and at that time, he was on this fruit diet, right, where it was almost 100% fruit.
Oh,
right?
That's no bueno.
I read that. I go, oh, cool. This sounds great. I love fruit. So I had this big bowl of fruit, and then I went to lift weights, and it was the worst workout ever. I was so tired. Everything felt heavy. Normally, I would have a peanut butter sandwich, and it's not the perfect pre-workout meal, but it's a balance of fat, protein, and carbohydrates to some extent. And whenever I had that, this is a poor man's meal. This is when I was in college. I would always have a great workout, and I didn't figure it out until later that just a higher fat, more balanced approach works really well for me. And then a certain amount of fat intake is very important to fuel hormone optimization as well. Your sex hormones, DHEA. Pregnenolone on testosterone.
Hey, let's talk about nuts for a minute.
Yeah.
Because I've never really heard a good, clear message on how much, whether you can use the nut butters. And I'm a little confused about it. Vinny always talks about peely nuts for fats.
Yeah.
Everyone knows macadamia nuts for fats. But really, what I've never really seen it broken down very well. And how much almond versus almond butter and you know what I mean? Any sense of this?
I think that's a good question for Mike. I know you're big on healthy fats from nuts.
I love nuts. I love nuts, and I crave them all the time. But I tend to go towards the almond butter, so I figure there's probably a carbohydrate in there or some extra fats or something. So that's probably why I'm doing it. But go ahead.
No, I love almond butter. I could grab a jar of almond butter and a spoon and have a meal.
Yep.
So I'm a big fan of that stuff too. Yep. I don't know. I don't know if you can really overdo nuts and seeds that easily because they're so high calorie and they're so nutrient dense. You're giving your body so many good things that I think you fill up faster. It's really the food that's low in nutrition and high in calories that you have to worry about because you're not getting anything nutrition wise from them that your body will just keep going.
What about non-nut nuts? I mean, like peanuts. Aren't cashews not even nuts?
Well, they say that
peanuts are a legume, yeah. Technically.
Yeah. And are they okay in the range of this? It seems to me like they're super high calorie, aren't they?
Yeah, they're high calorie, but you have to look. I'm not worried about calories. I don't count calories. I don't even recommend people count calories. Let's focus on infusing as much real food nutrition into your body because let's look at calories from another standpoint. Can you overeat broccoli? Can you overeat cucumbers? Can you overeat tomatoes? Sure, you can, but who does?
No one has
the bowl of broccoli and then goes, okay, give me eight more because I just got this craving.
Right.
No, you've got fibers, you've got nutrition. You're giving when you give your body what it needs, you can eat a lot less than you think you do. I mean, I'm 6 feet tall. I weigh around 198 right now. I don't eat more than 3,000 calories a day. And I train like a savage several times a week. But what I do eat is very high in nutrition. So I don't have to consume an overabundance of processed food to get what little nutrition is in there.
Right.
But there are, that's why I bring up the nuts. It's interesting. You're thinking with that direction because I can easily overeat them easily.
Okay.
I can eat them like potato chips.
Right.
Any nut. And so that being the case, is there anyone I should avoid? Is there one that are really better than the other? Given that
you're not overweight at all though, right?
I have to watch it. I mean, I have to be careful.
You're fine.
Yeah, Susan. Some guy on Facebook.
So, I mean, I wouldn't be worried if I were you, honestly. You look good. You're an active guy. You push yourself professionally. You push yourself physically.
Some nuts.
I do. But I noticed that I could like really go to town.
To me, look, if this is my personal belief, and Mike, tell me what you think. I like to get some almonds in. If I can't have avocados, because I think monounsaturated fats are really important metabolically.
Sure.
Yeah. So I like to incorporate almonds. And I like to, every once in a while, incorporate walnuts because I think it's a great plant-based source of omega-3s.
Walnut's the only one I wouldn't binge on. But almonds.
I love if walnuts.
Brazil nuts are the ones you probably wouldn't binge on.
That's right. Brazil nuts,
the most boring nut of all time.
But maybe a little more than walnuts somehow. But if there is a bowl of almonds, I'll have trouble not finishing it.
How about pecans?
Pecans I hate.
So somebody on Facebook said nuts should be used for variety only, very poor nutrition. So that's
I disagree with that.
I disagree completely.
What their background is, but I would disagree with that. It's
if we were concerned with just we're talking about in a spectrum of a pretty high calorie, I mean nutrient dense diet, right? We're not leaving stuff out.
You're eating macadamia nuts now.
I was trying that to see how that worked, if I could curb that, and I ended up buying almond butter.
Macadamia nuts are an excellent source of healthy saturated fat.
Yeah.
The problem with me is like I can eat 2,500 calories of macadamia nuts easily in a sitting.
How many nuts is that about?
That's not that. You know what I'm saying?
I may be doing that every day.
I'm like Mike. So. I don't believe it. You know that unless you're a competitive bodybuilder, I don't think it's good advice to start weighing your food and counting your calories.
No, see, I can't do
that. But at the same time, I know it's not right for me to eat, 200 macadamia nuts. Yeah. It's just not
200. Okay, so 50 is okay.
Real quick,
well, Mike. Here's the thing too is. If you do high fat, you have to do low carbohydrates. If you do high carbohydrates, you have to do lower fat. Yeah. Otherwise, you just get nutrient spillover, right?
I get it.
So if you're on a high fat diet and then you add in a bunch of sugar, you're going to fill up stored body fat like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Vice versa as well. So if you're where I'm going is if you're eating a lot of nuts and seeds, let's say you just eat a huge amount because you enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's not really a fact. It doesn't really matter unless you're eating a ton of carbohydrates, not necessarily even at that meal, just at some other point. Okay. You know, that's where it's problematic.
So there's not a lot of carb hidden in nuts, any particular?
No, not much at all.
Let's say you're
eating a lot of nuts and seeds, and then you have a ton of pasta later.
No. I know better than that. But
it's fibrous too. That the carbohydrates,
I noticed a craving for it. I've noticed momentum with it. That's Interesting.
I think the craving is probably a good thing. There's probably something in it that your body's desiring, so you're gravitating towards it. There's certainly worse things you could be craving, so I don't think it's even
something
a problem.
Other than meat.
Yeah. No, I love it.
Mike, what is in a nutshell? I mean, because you, as for a non doctor, are one of the guys that I really trust when it comes to hormone optimization. Dr. Drew is a perfect example. Look, this is a guy who can't do testosterone replacement therapy, even though your age probably
I'd love to. Well, I'm gonna go fight with my oncologist.
Dr. Drew. Drew.
Is that because of some health reason?
Yeah, I have prostate cancer. So,
It's sort of. Well, here's the thing about prostate cancer, and again, I'm saying this as a researcher, not as a doctor or an expert. But there's a Harvard doctor who wrote a book on testosterone. His name Morgenthaler. That's his name, Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler. Okay, he wrote a compelling piece on the connection between testosterone and prostate cancer. And the Cliff Notes version is that it's like a saturation method with a plant, meaning that if I pour a glass of water on a plant, it's going to absorb that water. Now, if I pour five more glasses, it's not going to absorb any more water. It's just going to sit there. So with prostate cancer, it only needs a small amount of testosterone to convert into DHT to cause prostate hypertrophy and other prostate issues. So whether you have high testosterone or low testosterone is immaterial because it only requires a small amount. Now, again, this is Dr. Morgenthaler's thesis.
His thesis and thinking like that in terms of the genesis of prostate cancer is pretty mainstream. But once you have prostate cancer, you understand that we don't even know what activates metastases yet. We really don't. So I may have some cells sitting in my back somewhere waiting for some cue to go.
Sure. Yeah.
And testosterone, and by the way, when we treat it, should I get it? It's with testosterone, androgen blockers. That's what we. It's all about the androgen receptor in terms of dealing with prostate cancer.
Are you concerned with increasing your testosterone at all, or just TRT, exogenous?
I just love to do it. I think you
would do well with Clomid. That's one thing that Dr. Mark Gordon.
Well, let me tell you, what worries me about that is I was taking DHEA when I got prostate cancer, and that made me think.
You've already had it. Okay.
Yeah, I just wonder. I responded well to it, but I thought, well, maybe that's what did it, or who knows.
Yeah, no, Dr. Drew has no prostate now. He had a robot rip it out of his body.
Oh, wow, okay, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
A robot. I imagine just the master cylinder coming in and just grabbing it out of my.
Am I lying though? You had a robot.
Yes, you're lying. They put it through my abdomen.
Did a robot take your prostate out?
Somebody operating a robot took it out.
What was the amount of DHEA you were taking? Do you remember?
50 milligrams.
And this was just a tablet you're taking.
Yeah, not much. Again, it's probably unrelated, but it made me nervous. That's all I'm saying.
I understand. Some people do have an increase in PSA when they take any hormone, whether it's pregnenolone, DHEA, or testosterone.
That's correct. But I had cancer.
No doubt.
That's time for a break.
Wait. But I'm asking this one. There was a question though. It's that I want to finish this to TRT thing. You noticed how I've stopped talking about that lately, Mike?
Yes.
On the current diet, I don't feel that desire for it.
Okay.
Because what is TRT? Let's talk about it after the break.
All right. We got to take a real quick break. We're with our guest, Mike Mahler.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break to talk about Molecule, something awesome. Molecule is an air filtration system. It replaces 50 years of antiquated technology. Okay? It goes beyond HEPA filtration.
So let's say that again, because it's important to note that
the air filtration world
has been based on technology, sort of World War II level technology.
Yeah.
Finally, we're moving it forward.
It goes beyond HEPA filtration to not just capture but completely destroy the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can trap. You hear me? Molecule makes a meaningful impact, and this means a lot for me. On asthma and allergy sufferers.
You know, I've read their literature. I looked at this product pretty carefully, and my wife has allergies, so we're going to be using it a lot in our households. And I've had this dry eye syndrome since I had my PRK procedure. It's been driving me insane.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping this will help with that as well. So I am going to become a religious user, sort of wherever we are. And I like the idea that they call this the Apple of air purifiers.
Yeah.
I like that. And I've looked at the literature. There's some stuff that was presented to the American College of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology. It's very, very impressive. So it's not trivial. It's based in good science.
And it, like you pointed out, is the Apple of air purifiers. The design is cool. It's not going to make your house look all junky. You know,
no.
The design is nice, and it's sleek, and it's also backed by the EPA, so you know you're not going to be destroying the Earth. Molecules claims on this technology have been tested and verified by third-party laboratories like the University of Minnesota, University of South Florida, and the South Florida Center for Biological Defense. Molecules technology has been personally effective and verified by science people, but most importantly, it's been tested by real people. Molecule has already helped allergy and asthma sufferers like myself around the country better cope with their conditions and significantly reduce their symptoms, especially now, people. I hate to, you know, talk about something so sad, but during these California wildfires, for those of you listening in Southern California, get that air filtration system, and there's no better one than good old Molecule. And right now, Dr. Drew, tell them about the special offer.
And for $75 off your first order, visit Molecule, MOLEKULE.com, and at checkout, enter the promo code SWOLE.
SWOLE. Dr. Drew and I both know you're going to love it.
I want to welcome True Niagen to the show. True Niagen, of course, is a dietary supplement designed to boost a key cellular resource called NAD, or nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. A lot of research today on NAD. While the science is preliminary, studies are really showing some promising results. I've been watching this carefully. And what's exciting about these studies, it indicates the research suggests that increased NAD levels may potentially help with cellular metabolism, regulate circadian rhythm, and they're even hopeful that it may slow the effects of aging. I take it because the research looks very compelling. Again, these studies are all very early. The science, though, is impressive. Biohacking community has gotten on board with this. And I've been intrigued by the possibilities surrounding NAD and the research behind True Niagen. I suggest you check out their website for yourself. Back in June, I had the chance to speak with the company's chief scientific advisor, Dr. Charles Brenner, here on this podcast, and it was a fascinating discussion that really piqued my interest in all the possible applications for a product like this. Definitely check out that episode, and to learn more about the research, science, and the True Niagen supplements, visit drdrew.com/TrueNiagen. That's my site, drdrew.com/TRUNIAGEN, True Niagen.
Welcome back to the Swole Patrol. Our guest today is strength coach, nutrition, and supplement expert Mike Mahler. Dr. Drew was talking about testosterone replacement therapy, which is TRT.
And let me just say, you know, I was talking about it with Mike all the time because, like, oh, I sure would love to do that. I'd optimize my training. I'd feel better. And then I went on this carnivore diet, and it corrected everything. My wife's aware of it.
I think his penis got bigger too.
Sleeping better.
Well, that's a big plus, right?
Sleeping better, everything up where I'm like, I don't need that anymore. It made me thinking about it, which is weird.
I'm on it and it's good for my workouts.
Yeah. And the other
thing, go in now.
Have you done any lab work?
I have not. It would be curious too. Yeah. I'm doing some next week. In about a week, I'm doing some and I'll let you know.
Okay. I'd be curious.
I tell you what I did do. I did lipids and everything else and they had literally never been better. I've been following them since I was in my 20s because I've been worried about it. And this was absolutely the best cholesterol profile of my life.
Did they test you for diabetes?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Mike, real quick, there's a lot of people that are interested in a plant-based diet and a vegan lifestyle. And I was just at dinner the other night with a friend of mine who's vegan. And the lady sat there in front of my face and had chips and salsa for dinner. Because she didn't want to eat any animal products, and I, for moral reasons, I absolutely just bow at the altar and respect that totally. But I know from the little I know about nutrition, she's not doing what she needs to do to take care of herself.
But there were sunflower seeds on the avocado.
But I do feel like that a lot of vegans and you know people who switch to a plant based diet, they make that mistake of just not eating animal products and therefore feeling like they're doing their job.
Really?
They don't know
to adjust?
No.
Oh,
I feel
my
like
God,
that,
that's dangerous.
And
right? Well, that's true to a large extent. I mean, Oreos are technically vegan, right?
So yeah.
There's a lot of things that are vegan that are not healthy. And then there's a lot of vegan junk food and so forth. And you can focus on fake meat analogs and overly processed foods. I'm a big believer in eating real food.
Right.
But also what I try to tell people that follow a vegan diet, and especially those who got into it for animal morality issues, which is how I got into it when I was a teenager, is the best promotion of a vegan diet is you exuding profound health, meaning that people will just want to know what you're doing. They're like, man, you look great. Or young lady, you look great. What are you doing? Because if you don't look good and you don't look healthy, people may listen to what you're saying and go, ah, I get where you're coming from. Factory farming is terrible. You know, I don't want to support that, but I don't want to look like you either. I don't know if I can, you know, I don't know if I can follow this.
Yeah.
So the key is to do a whole food plant-based diet, and then you're going to have to play around with macronutrients. I know people that do great on high carbohydrate, lower fat. And then I know people like myself who do way better on higher fat, lower carbohydrate. So it's going to take a little bit of playing around with. But if you focus on real food, whatever dietary approach you take, that's a good starting point. And then you just dial it in from there. And it's going to take a little patience. It's going to take a little bit of time. Or you work with an expert who can help dial it in a little bit faster for you. But focus on real food. Don't try to duplicate what you were eating when you're eating meat. And what I mean by that is, okay, I'm not eating hamburgers anymore, so I'm going to eat overly processed veggie burgers. I'm not eating steak anymore, so I'm going to eat seitan, fake seitan steak. Focus on real food, and there's culinary options such as Indian food. My mother was from India. She was a lifelong vegetarian, so I grew up with Indian food. And a lot of Indian food is vegetarian and vegan, and it's delicious too. So that's a good starting point to just incorporate healthy food that tastes really good, and then experiment with different culinary options, Thai food, et cetera.
There you go. That's a great piece of advice.
I like that.
Because somebody go ahead.
Somebody had a question. If you're diabetic, can you be vegan?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you always want to work with a physician who knows what he or she is doing, whatever dietary approach you take. But there's people that have done high carbohydrate vegan diets that have improved their glucose levels dramatically. Other people may not, though. I mean, if I do super high carbohydrate, it's probably going to have a negative impact on my glucose. That's just the cards I've been dealt. But I think switching over to healthy food, real food, that alone is going to help insulin sensitivity and leptin sensitivity, because it's all the fake garbage processed food that these hormones don't know what to do with. So they make these insulin and leptin receptors much weaker, so it can't process the good food that you're consuming.
A lot of good advice, man.
You know, I heard, just as long as we're geeking out on diet a little bit, it made me think about, here's my thought process. I went, oh, geez, if you're diabetic, you need a specialist dietitian who knows how to advise you on this. And that costs money, and who gets access to that? And then we're talking about all these foods that are kind of expensive. And there's a whole topic of food equity that this country needs to have a little bit. Because I started thinking, the other part of my head was, geez, with all this information, it's amazing. We still have giant populations of humans that just don't understand it, don't do it, don't follow it. And some of it is food equity. We you know what I mean?
Explain.
We don't.
McDonald's is cheap.
Exactly.
Right.
McDonald's
right.
is cheap. 7-Eleven is cheap. And we don't culturally distribute it properly and endorse it, help it, and it's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, food subsidies is the real reason why those foods are cheap too, right? Yeah. So we have government food subsidies of corn, et cetera, so that these
– it's exactly –
I mean, look, McDonald's is cheaper now than it was when I was a kid.
That's right. It's exactly what I was thinking about.
How's that even possible?
I was thinking about corn. I was thinking about all the corn subsidies and why we still have that. It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of people look at organic food and they go, wow, that's really expensive. And the only reason they think it's expensive is because they're used to buying subsidized foods at a much cheaper rate.
Yep.
So the comparison, you go, wow, that's way more expensive than this. They go, it's a point of comparison, though. It's because the foods you're used to getting at a cheap price, it's not so much that they're cheap. It's just that they're heavily subsidized.
I get
so you.
You
have the illusion.
I would just argue for all of us that do geek out of this stuff, it occurred to me that that's a topic we should keep our eye on.
It's 100% it is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in the inner city who are going, I can't afford all this stuff, and that's a genuine problem.
Or they don't have access. It's not distributed there. Or they have time. There's so many things about that.
100%
equitability that's bothering me right now. So anyway.
Yeah, and look, and a lot of it is – you're right. I mean, I guess equity is the best way of describing it because I live in Venice Beach and
forget it.
I literally was like stuck. I'm not normally stuck without a meal. I'm very good about preparing in advance and having my meal set up.
Yeah.
But I was the other day, I was in a pinch and I had to run to Access Hollywood, back to Access Hollywood. And I realized, oh my God, I got to eat. And within where you could throw a baseball to, I could get
anything.
10 salads
anything.
And
yeah,
you know whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
And
right.
I just know that that's not the same in most neighborhoods.
Yep.
And there's, you know, that maybe something about that needs to change.
Not in this neighborhood.
Well, we're okay here, but this is all – but even here in Pasadena, it's
It's a pain in the ass to park.
Oh, well, I mean, imagine Los Angeles is basically a bubble, right? Because even in rural part, even in obscure parts of Los Angeles, you're still going to have way better options than, let's say, a rural part of Ohio or most of America, right?
That's
you start traveling around America, especially middle America, and try to find good, healthy options, regardless of your eating type.
Yep.
It's going to be difficult.
You're right.
I do think the internet's helped, though. You know, it's
well, this is my point.
That's
my point. That this, we should really keep our eye on it because the information's there and we should be helping distribute it. That's all I'm saying.
Well, we have two huge problems right now in America. One, we have epidemic levels of obesity where children are obese now, like never before, right? Never in human civilization ever has there been obesity like there is in America now.
Yep.
And then two, estrogen dominance is huge. I see guys that are visibly estrogen dominant every day, meaning that they carry body fat the way an overweight woman would carry body fat in the hips, lower body, et cetera. Hmm. And this happened, I mean, every day I see this. these are huge problems.
I always assumed that was just the obesity and the sedentary life.
No, it's a different fat. If you know, look, watch a movie from the 70s.
I know what you mean.
You watch The Godfather.
I get what you're saying.
You see the fat guy?
Yeah,
he's the fat guy, but he's barrel chested.
No, he's
and he's kind of solid.
Stocky. He's a stocky guy.
Now fat,
right, fat stomach, not fat glutes. Like, look, I saw a guy who had a fat butt the way an overweight woman your story in body fat. And what scares me is that a lot of people are just okay with this. They think it's fine. Dude. Even some guys who work out. I see guys who work out who have a certain level of muscle tissue, but they're visibly estrogen dominant to me. I don't even have to see their lab work. I can tell by the way they're holding.
Where's that coming from?
Many factors.
Food additives.
Food is a huge one. Low quality food is definitely one thing. A lot of chemicals in the environment.
Huh. Crazy.
Society, to some extent, there's somewhat of a war on masculinization. Anything that's considered like, look, testosterone is always described in a negative way.
Yeah.
Oh, like there's if there's a bully at a bar, what do people say? Oh, he's got too much testosterone.
Yeah,
yeah.
When in reality, he has too little testosterone, too much estrogen, and a poor testosterone to estrogen ratio, and probably a lot of other things as well, but that's why that person is overcompensating, because the people I know that have high testosterone, alpha male type guys, these are the nicest guys you'll ever meet. They're not inappropriate when they talk to women. They're very nice to everyone they come across, and they're also very concerned about everyone's well-being within their proximity. Now, that's someone who has high testosterone, good testosterone rate.
Because they're happy.
Rate. Not some bully. Exactly. Someone who's just happy, self-assured.
Testosterone makes you happy. I know.
Oh, it does. I mean, testosterone, I think anyone, I mean, obviously depression is not my expertise. That's Dr. Drew's thing. But I think people with depression, I think looking at what their testosterone level should be part of the analysis.
You don't know how much, particularly for females, you have no idea how true that
is. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely for women.
I agree
with you.
I
think the full hormone profile is important just to provide more intel on what's going on.
Yep, I agree.
That's a good note to leave on. MikeMahler.com is the official website. And again, I can't recommend enough his entire line of his Live Life Aggressively, the Live Life Aggressively podcast, and his aggressive testosterone booster in particular is freaking awesome. And
thank you.
And he's got the numbers to prove it, and he's got plenty of clients to prove it. Mike, dude, it was a real pleasure to talk to you again. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you so much.
Somebody asked a question. What kind of blood test should you have asked for to test your hormone level?
If you're female, the basics are estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Somebody might want to also check sex hormone binding globulin, which is, you know, determines how much free level of hormones you have. Thyroid should be part of the profile. Blood sugar should be part of the profile. Am I missing anything?
This is what I did. I'm a layperson.
Yeah.
I went to my doctor. And I asked him what would he want.
Yeah.
And he told me personally, I went to Quest Diagnostics, my local Quest Diagnostics, and I had them pull blood for that. They sent the results back to my doctor.
And what was it?
We
don't know.
It was a lot of stuff. I mean,
what else?
T3.
Yeah.
DHEA,
did they do that?
DHEA, free testosterone, estrogen levels.
Yeah.
It's
hard to interpret those
glucose
things. Very hard to interpret
glucose.
those particular ones you just mentioned for a middle-aged male. It's hard to know. But go ahead.
Reverse T3, glucose.
Checking all the thyroid stuff. Yeah.
So, you know, all the metabolic stuff. Yeah.
Didn't do a sex hormone binding globulin.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
He went over it with me and said, there's nothing here to be concerned of. You're in great health. So I was like, okay.
But but we don't really. I mean, I bet Mike Mahler may knows more about interpreting than an endocrinologist in the way, the kinds of nuances you're looking for,
right,
which is optimization of performance, things like that. We're looking for medical problems.
I'm looking that me right now. Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to know like how I could tweak it to optimize my performance or look better.
Yeah,
I wanted to know I'm not going to die.
Oh, no, no.
You know,
don't
like,
worry about that. Those hormone, those levels don't really even. Yeah, figure into you dying very much.
So. And frankly, I was hoping he'd go, yeah, we need to get you on some growth hormone and some testosterone. Unfortunately, he didn't. He's like, you're in great health.
I understand.
God damn it. Hey, everybody. It is the Swole Patrol Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Catherwood. And Dr. Drew is at Dr. Drew, of course. Join the email list today. Send your questions. drdrew.com/contact. And put Swole at the top of the email so we can get your comments. And this will get you a weekly email reminder with a link to this show and all the great shows that Dr. Drew and I do and all the shows that Dr. Drew does by himself and, of course, with Adam Carolla, the great Ace Man. Please tell a friend and subscribe on iTunes. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars. And on Podbean or Google Play, all 3 help us out. We also are on YouTube/Dr. Drew and hope you can give us all your comments, even if they're if you're a troll and you want to destroy our feelings and our emotions. Support our sponsors and the show. Click on the banners on drdrew.com for the links for special discounts for the products Dr. Drew and I endorse 100%. Send questions and comments to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Swole Patrol Podcast, or on Twitter @Swole Patrol Pod. And be good, be swole. #Swole Patrol.